It may even have been a psychological reason why they switched to a liquid rather than a solid diet, why they became water scientists, flavor specialists, and why, as a result, they only have rudimentary teeth. Their homes, after immigration onto Itibiratu, were built near beautifully planted water gardens. They practice hydrotherapy for internal and external cures, using the right texture, temperatures, flavors and minerals of many different waters. As Xiti told me, the Itibirans went back and forth many times to their dying planet, moving over 400 million tons of human life, plants, insects, animals, biological machines, work and lab equipment, recording devices, musical instruments, etc., etc. There has never been such a mass evacuation in the whole history of universe, I was informed. Indeed, only the necessity to survive had forced the Itibiran scientists to think about traveling onto another planet and to create the necessary means of transportation. Only because of their highly advanced understanding of all life-creating ways of nature, were they able to create and test a series of dimensional filtering and prismatic-type life-receiving space batteries reacting to the intercosmic forces of color, light, temperature, time and other cosmic waves. The Itibirans, with the same instinctive intelligence Noah must have had, created new, fascinating interconnection of cosmic batteries, reaching the dimensional scientific switch from receiving to sending cosmic forces. In other words, instead of waves being received, activated and returned, they were able to move with the activated return waves themselves. The whole thing, I found out, goes far beyond our present evolutionary pattern. We have isolated ourselves from the life-creating forces of nature. We are in a way similar to other civilizations, like those on planet Malta, which Xiti mentioned as the planet where they all die of cancer. When I asked her why do they all die of cancer, she said, they advanced from a purely mechanical age towards the age of no return, the age of godliness. In other words, there are people in the universe so far away from God and nature, that because of the superiority of their mechanical gadgets, they came to believe that they are like God themselves. The result, as Xiti pointed out, may be their destruction by cancer. Out of my diary. The biological structure of the spacecraft makes it impossible even for a technically trained man, to draw a blueprint what makes our brains, our nerves transmit orders to our bodies to move heavy weights. The forces of life, certainly, are similar. But who is qualified to understand this puzzle? Perhaps a futuristic minded biomedical expert? A brain or nerve specialist? Where are the limiting factors? How are they able to control these forces? Yes, they tried to explain. But I do not even know how a television circuit works, much less shall I ever understand this. However, one thing I am absolutely sure about, and that is, the naturalistic concepts that our out-of-space visitors perhaps have had cosmic power for millions of years, made them use the greatest powerhouses of the universe, cosmic energy bodies a billion times stronger than our sun. There are thousands of different types of spacecrafts, but none of them are able to operate without the interdimensional energy craft. Why? Because there are tremendous cosmic empty spaces where they need energy crafts in order to substitute the lack of direct and positive interconnective power. Chapter 10, Thera. On the second day of my arrival, precisely in the late afternoon hours, I had an example of the different way in which the Itibirans treat sinners, or, as we would say, in this particular case, a criminal. A message had come to the control ship from one of the guards on duty on the perimeter of the plantation. He had captured a sorry-looking Indian found trying to help himself to some fruit of the young plants. The guard had taken the man to Satura, who had sent a signal to Xiti, asking that I should come along to the control room in order to see if I could help in the interrogation of a fellow human being. We went along to the control room. The Indian was there, a small, emaciated fellow, looking absolutely bewildered. Satura and I questioned the man. He had escaped from prison and was trying to make his way up the Mirim River. When I asked him why he had been imprisoned, he told me that, in a fit of blind rage, he had killed another Indian. for this crime, he had been found guilty and sentenced to death. Now, a death sentence in these parts is not quite so fearful as it sounds. The usual practice in the case of a condemned man is to lock him in the local jail, which is a very insecure place. The jailers then make inquiries about the man's family, particularly if they have plenty of dinero and can pay to have the prisoner's escape engineered. Indians most certainly admit their crimes and very often are proud of them. If the family can pay, then the man escapes. If the prisoner's family cannot afford to pay for the escape, or if the man has no family, then he is still allowed to escape, and is shot while doing so. I have it on credible authority that in the Leticia province not a single judicial execution has been carried out. All the condemned prisoners over that long period of time have either escaped, or have been shot while trying to escape. It would seem as though our Indian was just about the first genuine escaper. He had killed a fellow Indian. He had been sentenced to death. He had no money, no family. And he had escaped, stealing a boat while doing so and trying to make his way into even more remote parts by way of the River Mirim. It was because of his mentioning the River Mirim, that I was able, later in Lima, to place the Itabiran plantation. Now, I reckoned that, although it would be a nuisance, for the river traffic would have to be interfered with, the authorities would make some show of trying to recapture the escaped prisoner. I explained this to Satubra, who agreed with my reasoning, and looked a trifle worried. If the authorities made an intensive search, then they might well stumble upon the Mirim River plantations. And it wouldn't be too difficult to trace the prisoner's route. He had come up the Mirim, had lost his way for a few days in the Torture Scalves tributary, had made his way back to the main stream of the Lower Mirim, and had finally come to roost in the Itabiran settlement, chiefly because he had broken no less than 3 outboard propeller blades and had been unable to continue his journey in the boat he had stolen. With religious conviction, the Itabirans began to cure the man of all his many ailments. I think that the Indian himself, at the beginning, hardly knew what was happening to him. He was passed from one astronaut scientist to the next. I was simply amazed by the eagerness of these men to treat the Indian. As the man had been plagued by insects, so that he had a poisoned eye, septic bites, was worm-ridden and emaciated, all of it looked like being a long nursing job. But I had forgotten their great many fantastic vegetative medicines. I watched my friends make a very careful selection of all kinds of juices. These they gave to the man. Within a short time of only 2 days, the Indian refugee was all right. The man who had been ready for the undertaker, even though the vulture birds do this work in the jungle, was again on his feet, prancing about like a 2-year-old. "Que pasó aquí?" he said. "Kung's son is to gents." He wanted to know from me. "Who are these men? Where am I?" He kept on speaking in the atrocious Spanish that we had used during his first interrogation. "They are friends," I told him. "Explorers, that is good. I must make my way to the Upper Mirim, then make my way to Cerro do Sol. Don't worry. My friends will take you there, I am sure." "How?" "In one of their spacecraft," I said, laughing. Suddenly, it dawned upon the Indian that all this must be the work of the devil. "You call those things ships?" he said. "He must have taken the spacecraft for round buildings of some kind." I saw how the man became afraid of what he saw. His reaction was only normal. Naturally, as he had seen white people in places like Iquitos and Leticia, as he spoke Spanish and had been to school, he immediately became suspicious, and suspicion, as we know, creates fear. Right there and then, I wanted to find out what another human being, having had an education, even rudimentary one, would think about out-of-space people. So I just let him have it, like they say in America. I told him that these people came to the Amazon jungles from another planet. "No me diggers, you don't tell me," the flummoxed Indian kept repeating over and over again. His eyes rolled as he took in the silvery outline of the control craft, then hastily he crossed himself and said, "Dios no, Dios no." There was nothing that could stop him laughing. He kept on laughing for a long time. You see, he had gone a little crazy, as they say, in Latin America, un poco loco. His nerves, shattered already from his exposure to the jungle, were unable to resist. His mind, unable to understand that our friends had come as friends, became unhinged. There was nothing the Itibirans could do for him. For a couple of days Satara ordered him to be kept inside the health center of the control craft. This is what I noted about the case in my diary. His intrusion taught me one thing: ordinary human beings are not yet conditioned to accept our friends from outer space. It will be some time before Itibirans shall be able to move freely about our world and be known for what they are. However, the amazing point is that the Itibirans do move about our planet in limited numbers. Satara himself was an example of this. Perhaps he chose his countries carefully. India, for example, of course, when they mixed freely, it is with pacific or unsophisticated people such as the Indian peasants they employed on their plantations. These Indians were employed on very humdrum tasks, keeping the area free of insects, because, despite the protective covers, insects did manage to find their way into the seedlings and saplings. The Indians looked upon their employers as light-skinned foreigners from another part of the world. I doubt if they gave a second thought to the rather unusual chin formation of the Itibirans. In any case, the simple Amazon Indians, unlike the man from Letitia Jail, would not have believed that people could come from other planets. They would have rejected such a story in exactly the same way as most of us would reject the idea of several men having been landed on the moon, if we had not seen it on TV. I spoke to Satara about this very point. At first, he agreed, the local Indians looked upon us with some caution. But then Nitya and I began to heal their wounds, and cure their sick. They soon came to accept us. Perhaps, I wrote into my diary, humanity one day shall accept these people as friends. Also we realize they have come to heal most of our century-old moral sicknesses, and not just our physical ones. Footnote: through the study of thousands of year-old memory of memory computation, the Itibiran scientists and religious leaders have come to the conclusion that only on the underdeveloped planets, the brutality of man go so far as to make women responsible, for instance, for birth control, which Itibirans definitely feel is part of man's duty. Also your disgusting habit of involving women and children in war. Most of the time, our friends from out of space say, women and children do not even know why men are fighting and killing. Chapter 11. The Lost City. On the River Mirim plantation, without doubt, the most dangerous man was Teru, the medicine man of the Indian tribesmen. By a rare chance, as a young boy of 15, Teru had the task of watching three captured Peruvian soldiers. These unlucky men, kept as prisoners of the savages for over 2 years, were finally tortured to death during a tribal festival. One of the soldiers, a rather cultivated man, he must have been, taught the Spanish language to Teru, who several months later, ventured into the Amazon capital town of Iquitos all by himself. Doing so, he became an important man to his tribe. He was able to steal knives, nails, machetes and many other important things. But what impressed his fellow tribesmen was Teru's return with a bag full of salt. Salt to the Indians is considered as valuable as gold. Because of his new authority and in the struggle for leadership, Teru, for a handful of salt, had the old medicine man murdered in cold blood. It was at this time when the Itibirans, impressed by the linguistic superiority of Teru, began to fear the disclosure of their Amazon base headquarters. They had several other plantations, one I believe to be near the Bolivian Porcalambo River. On the 19th of February 1967, after having had another rather disappointing breakfast, I was asked to talk to Teru and find out as one human to the next what his intentions were. This request surprised me very much, as I had always thought the Itibirans were capable of reading our minds. As a matter of fact, they are able to do so, if there is a mind to read. What I was soon aware of, after having a chat with Teru, was this: he was a man unable to think the way we do, or even make a plan for the next day. These Indians find enough fruit from day to day. They hunt and fish enough during one single day, consequently they do not need to think or plan beyond the 12-hour circle. Should this man-Turku suddenly get the impulse to disappear and venture down the Mirim towards civilization, he would certainly do so, but I doubted very much that he would do so in order to betray the Atabirans. Not that he was not capable of treachery, but this simply would not enter his mind. Besides, who would want to believe him? Suppose one of my readers decided to tell the police authorities about people from out of space. How would he go about it without making himself suspicious? Imagine a primitive man from the deepest jungle wanting to denounce the presence of our friends. I felt certain that Satara and his scientist crew members had nothing to fear from Spanish-speaking Turku. In a way, I liked Turku. He had all the instincts of an anaconda, the giant Amazon snake, very peaceful when satisfied, but extremely dangerous when hungry or in love. The trouble with Turku was that most of the time he was hungry and in love. He then disappeared for several days, Xiti told me, and returned with fantastic tales about his monkey-killing traps, and his solitary war against the moribund Mygals, the greatest of all living spiders, so large that it cannot be covered by a plate. Even though his wives, he had three, took up all his attention at night, Turku, when in love with someone else's property, had killed the watchdogs which the suspecting husbands had stationed before certain homes of a neighboring settlement. What his fellow tribesmen liked the best about him, however, was his bravery where the Mygals are concerned. To get as many of these murderers is a most dangerous undertaking. A few years ago, several people got killed in the town Rivervalta in Bolivia trying to burn down a house infested with the giant spiders. It so happened that the house was used as a quarter for passing soldiers. 17 of those were murdered at night by the poisonous monsters. The intelligent insect lowers itself at night and its bite means death. On the day of the execution of the owner of the house, who had been condemned, the authorities found the huge nests of the Apozorcus, as the Bolivians call the giant insect. I quite well began to understand the unconscious but very deep philosophy of Turku. Not like Shakespeare's to be or not to be, that is the question, but kill or be killed, that is the question. And sometimes even as a question it would be too late. On several occasions during my stay at the Mirim River base I was able to listen to Turku telling or making violent gestures to his people tending the plants. He wanted them to return to the outside world and to me he explained that life in the deadly forest is not as bad as we must believe it to be underneath our protective shield. As a matter of fact, he suddenly began to talk about a white man having gone native. He called this man Maury and sometimes Morris. I later found out that he spoke the truth, and that this fellow must have been a renegade from a big European town, perhaps Paris. His name, I suppose, must be Morris. Turku spoke of him as a real friend. I very much wanted to meet this fellow, but Turku never invited me to come along. An interesting psychological observation concerning Turku I must also mention. Unlike the Highland Shepherd and the escaped criminal, this primitive man was not at all frightened of the spacecraft. This he proved to me when I talked to him the first time. It was late in the afternoon, about 5 p.m. while talking to the Indian when suddenly we saw another control craft coming down. A beautiful spaceship it was, and as we had been on the outer fringes of the plantation, we were able to observe the big bird coming down only about 900 feet from the protected plantation area, very close to one of the supplely craft. It was a real pleasure to see the craft coming to such a soft and easy landing, like setting itself on a carpet of air. Out stepped the most audacious group of wild-looking but smiling savages followed by a bunch of serious Itabiran explorers. There was plenty of excitement, but what really made me shake my head was this: these, perhaps the most feared man-eaters of the endless forests, with ears of pendulous lobes and quills thrust from side to side through their nostrils, were laughing and giggling like little girls. What an excursion it must have been. What follows I noted into my diary as some of the happiest hours I had spent with these people. They were celebrating the discovery of a huge pre-Columbian symbol, a religious symbol of great significance to their civilization. This symbol, of which I include a design, the Etibireans had discovered at what they called Linilan, the Lost City. As Xiti was able to explain, I understand this Linilan city to be an ancient town of several million people, now buried underneath a layer of 7 feet of tropical growth. In order to excavate with their special equipment, the Etibireans had placed these selected Indian friends near strategic waterways and swamp passages as guards. The Etibirans had known these men already since their very first landing near Pucallpa. See map below. The amazing thing I discovered was the age of these Indians, all over 50 years, looking as healthy and young as those Indians being only 20 or 25. Another controversy. Had they been used as human guinea pigs by the Etibirans? Xiti never wanted to talk much about the subject, but she did tell me all about Linilan. Map of area that the Etibirans had their very first landing near Pucallpa, red pin here. Because of their extremely sensitive navigational equipment, the Etibirans found out that the secret of ancient South America, this uncompleted manuscript of human history, lies within the walls of many megalithic edifices and temples, fortresses of powerful civilizations unknown to us. How many brave explorers like Colonel Percy Harrison Fawcett, have tried in vain to penetrate this veil, prepared to face hardship, and found death? As one famous Portuguese explorer wrote, easy as it was to conquer the empire of the Incas, this was not so as regards the region east of the Andes, known commonly as the Amazon jungles, owing to the impenetrable forests which cover its surface. Though these men of iron had to struggle against obstacles such as an almost impenetrable growth, aided at times by human beings as barbarous as nature itself. Wide and tricky rivers, torrents capable of destroying anything which resisted them, hungry wild beasts, gigantic and poisonous reptiles, insects no less dangerous and more troublesome than the reptiles, inaccessible mountains, on whose slopes every step carried its risk, now of going over the precipice, now of being bitten by a venomous serpent or by one of the millions of equally poisonous ants, limitless forests, immense lagoons, swamps, torrential rains, inundations of enormous extent. But in many important respects these words of the historian are exaggerated. Between Cusco and the Brazilian highlands, the Etibirans discovered 7 recognized military trails constructed many thousands of years ago. One of these trails led to Linilan, the Lost City, the Rome of South America. No people are less racial and prejudiced, or are more friendly disposed towards all human beings as the Etibirans. Healing the Indians, they made friends with them forever. And the Indians, far from feeling inferior to them, regard the out-of-space people as their friends. What annoys most beings, not just human beings, is a suggestion of superiority, with the help of their Indian friends, as Xiti explained. Linilan was discovered on October 15, 1966, our time. The Etibiran explorers had been excavating for several months until on the 1st of February 1967 they opened the principal temple of Linilan and found the religious symbol of the flying man from out of space. Many generations of Indians and many a North American tourist have seen imitations of this pre-Columbian symbol without knowing its real meaning. But to have discovered this image within the Linilan temple must have been the fantastic proof that many thousands of years ago another civilization from out of space had first landed on this our lonely planet Earth. Not Columbus discovered America, but the ancient Vikings. Not Mr. Hua or Mr. Satura discovered planet Earth, but a much earlier team of astronauts. Still today I do not know what the Etibirans were celebrating that unforgettable day of February 1967. What did the Indians celebrate? Xiti tried to explain. Smilingly, she told me again and again, that every one of the crew felt happy because of the similar symbol they had on one of their control panels inside the craft, and indeed she showed this to me the next day. I found out that through the study of millions of religious symbols, the Etibirans had been able to solve the controversy about God, And with it the question as to whether the universe is a creation of a personal God, or whether God itself is the universe, not because of the geological, astrological and intercosmic science, nor because of dimensional theories or theological dogmas, but simply because of the most unbelievable collection of millions of religious symbols, and their analysis, did the Etebarans form their cosmophilosophy, or cosmic religion, which they believe to be the zenith of religious truth and wisdom. What the Linilan symbol really stands for, I was only finding out superficially. The deeper meaning I can only guess. The Linilan symbol, I feel, represents life, creating new matter. That much I understood. Also that it became the religious symbol of God nature. Note, I remember in particular one beautifully designed symbol in the health center of the spacecraft. I forgot to note the name. The symbol showed a man's hand protecting a woman's breast on which a baby was feeding. The symbol explains, they said, the mystery of human violence and man's highest duty, to protect women and children from violence. The question of what Etebarans really believe to be God nature, what their moral and ethical laws are, their prayers, their social behavior, etc. I was only surmising at the time, not until near the end of my stay was I to be informed. Chapter 12. The Discovery of the Gwyaba. Shortly after dawn, on the 20th of February 1967, I was told by Xity that my friends had decided to take a short break from their routine work as planters and go on another exploration trip. Looking through my diary notes, I find an entry about being a bit worried over my return to Lima. I knew I was overdue in the Peruvian capital, and that a backlog of work was waiting for me, especially where the installation of some machinery in the port of Callao was concerned. But, in the short time I had been in the Miram River base, I had become so fascinated with everything these people did, that the idea of spending a few days with them on another adventure really fascinated me. Secretly I wondered, as already in India and Lima, what would happen to them if one of their men or women were arrested. Little did I know, besides the fact that Xity used a perfectly imitated Argentine passport, that all Etebarans know exactly what to do and what not to do. For instance, in many countries, it is useless to show a passport if this passport does not show an entry stamp from the airport police. On the trip to Colombia, Satura decided not to use passports at all, but to proceed at night and only stay a very limited time and at a place where the chances of detection were absolutely out of the question. All day, during the 20th of February, I had stayed inside the control craft, experimenting with one of the iGenerator's historical computers, waiting for departure time. We finally left at about 10 p.m., after we all had a last vegetarian meal. The extremely short criss-cross over great altitude and distance was a disappointment. Exactly like on the first flight near Huancayo to the Miram River base, I did not notice, see, hear or feel anything at all. But I did observe, and with the utmost interest, the immediate and very clever control craft protection carried out in the darkness of what I was able to understand to be a huge delta swamp of the Magdalena River south of Barangala, Colombia. Within seconds, the spacecraft had covered itself with a special liquid coming out of a million pores which, besides being a perfect element of camouflage and natural coloring, also served as a bacteria and insect repelling agent. This only lasted about 5 to 10 minutes. When finished, we immediately embarked in two very comfortable and very flat speedboats. These boats on both sides, and on the bottom, were propelled by tiny and silent generators. There was no motor at all but a great number of their jets, working in absolute silence. I figured the speed of about 30 to 35 miles per hour, 48-56 kilometers per hour, and the trip itself lasted well over 1 hour. Because of the wonderful night temperature, everybody seemed to enjoy this traveling down the Magdalena River. The Etebarans carried their beautifully carved drinking gadgets and even though they never offered me a drink, they always had three little containers given to me to carry for my personal use. I was only able to speak to Mr. Satura, As Xity had not received clearance to join the party and all the other crew members did not carry language computers. The exception, of course, I found out later, was Mr. Hua. Approaching the port of Barranquilla, at about 11 p.m. we found an isolated spot, with wild hedges covering the river embankment. In spite of the moonlight, it was a dark night. Dogs howled.